In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning. Happy Saturday to everybody out there. November 11th, year of our Lord, 2023, live here at First String Sports. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, for the next 2 hours. Got tons of stuff to talk about. Oh, what an incredible, incredible couple days of football that we've had. Most games were on Thursday, so we've had a day to think about the games and gather information. But we had some wild and wacky games on Thursday night. The semifinals are set in all six divisions in the Central section, and we are here to talk about all of them and much, much more. We got a huge lineup for you guys. Let me get to that in a second. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Medders, PaulMeadors, or at 1430 ESPN. It's not called Twitter anymore. I get it. It's called X. Now people are now starting to call it X, or the formerly known as Twitter, but you guys know what we're talking about. What I definitely want to thank First String Sports again for hosting the show. I do it live here every Saturday. This is year number 3 of the Central Valley Sports Report. Every show has been from here. You guys know where it is, on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. I've already seen like 5 people in here getting their Letterman's jackets worked on. They're getting them customized, putting Bible verses, their patches, block letters, script, whatever they want. This is the only place in the Central section, Central Valley, that you can buy your Letterman's jacket. First String Sports, come on down. Great people here to work with. We also want to thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. Right now, it's a nice, cool, crisp 62 degrees, high of 71. And it's playoff weather. That's for darn sure. Super cold last night. I was at the Central Valley Christian and Tehachapi game. I'm going to be talking about that in a minute. And it got really, really cold. It felt like, finally, football playoff weather. All right, so what do we got on the docket here? After the break, we're going to be talking with Kerman coach Damon Jenkins. Those Lions came back to defeat the defending D3 champs, Kennedy, 34-28 on the road. They're going to be taking on number 1 Mission Prep next Friday. Now, if you guys haven't seen the game-winning touchdown on Twitter or X, you got to check it out. I can't wait to talk to Coach Jenkins about that play. It was a rushing play, well over 50 yards. Basically the final play of the game. Nothing tricky about the play. Straight up the middle. Their dude outran everybody for a game-winning touchdown. Again, beat the defending champs, Kennedy, and they move on to play Mission Prep. After Coach Jenkins, I got Central coach Kyle Biggs coming on. Those Grizzlies, I had a feeling, 7 seed. They went on the road and beat number 2 Frontier, 36-32. Another wild and exciting ending on that one. Touchdown pass from David Marquez to Braylon Hall after Frontier just taken the lead. And I've seen that play as well, and I retweeted it. And that play was, I mean, it was such a smooth play. Braylon Hall just caught the ball right over the middle, about 1 or 2 yards into the end zone, was hit a tiny bit, and just stood there, stood tall. So the Grizzlies advance. Who are they taking on? Well, defending state champs, Liberty, back-to-back D1 Central Section champs, but that's going to be a monster game down in Bakersfield next week. Looking forward to talking to Coach Biggs. At the top of hour number 2, Brandon Nagel, star Tommy Nix of Clovis East, the game that we had on 1430 ESPN, and another one of those phenomenal games. They held on, escaped, whatever you want to call it, Sanger, 17-14. They were up 17-0 in the first half, absolutely dominating that game defensively. Offensively, they could have put up a few more points. I'm sure Coach Nagel would agree on that one. Defense held strong. That final drive, Sanger was driving to take the lead, and Clovis East had basically a goal line stand. First and goal from the 10-yard line, stopped them on fourth down. What a running play. And who was it? Well, it was Tommy Nix. He's coming on the show. He's going to talk about that play. Sealed the victory. And they're going to be taking on number 1 Clovis North. at Veterans Memorial Stadium next Friday. That is going to be a whopper of a game. At the bottom of hour two, my guy Gabe Camarillo is producing the show from Home Field Advantage. He and I are going to break down all the action. We're going to be previewing the games next week, next Friday. Gabe's going to be previewing the games all week next week on a show from 3 to 5, 1430 ESPN. But Gabe and I, a little early preview of those games. And, you know, we'll be talking about our view of that Clovis East and Senger game. Lots and lots of stuff to talk about. It was a great, great week of high school football. I can't wait to dive more deeply into it for the next couple hours. But before I talk about some of the games, I got to mention, there was huge news this week in the baseball world. One of our own from the Central Valley, Stephen Vogt, graduate of Central Valley Christian, went to Azusa Pacific, played in the major leagues, two-time All-Star with the Oakland A's, World Series champ with the Atlanta Braves. Stephen Vogt was named the manager of the Cleveland Guardians this week. They had a press conference yesterday. I was able to watch that, about a 25-minute press conference. I encourage you guys to just Google it, Stephen Vogt press conference, Cleveland Guardians, and watch it. It gave a lot of insight into the man that Stephen Vogt is. He's the second youngest manager. He will be the second youngest manager in the major leagues. He's definitely earned it. I had the privilege in January of 2022. It doesn't seem that long ago, so about a year and 10 months ago, of interviewing Stephen Vogt. And it was before his last year that he signed with the Oakland A's. And I asked him that very question. He said, I want to play one more year, and he did. And I asked him a question, what are you going to do when you retire? Do you have aspirations to become a major league manager? And he said, absolutely. Absolutely. And here we are. He is the manager of the Cleveland Guardians. He did. We heard his name rumbling around as being a potential candidate to coach the San Francisco Giants. And a lot of us got really excited about that one, staying in California. But the Guardians snatched him up, and they got a good one. He's going to be a player's manager. He's a student of the game. Just a great, great hire. So congrats to Stephen Vogt, manager of the Cleveland Guardians. All right. Now, let's talk about some scores. I'm going to be recapping these as quickly as possible because I know you want to hear from the coaches themselves about how all these great games went down. All right, in Division I, Central defeated Frontier 36-31. We're talking with Kyle Biggs at around, let's say, 10:35, 10:36 or so. They're going to be facing the Liberty Patriots, who defeated Clovis 33-30. We're following that game as much as possible on Twitter and on Max Preps. Well, Liberty took a 26-7 lead over Clovis in that one. And, man, those Fighting Cougars came back. They actually took the lead 30-26 in the fourth quarter on a Deegan Rose 5-yard touchdown run with about 7 minutes left in that one. Liberty, as they always seem to do the last few years, marched down the field and scored a rushing touchdown. And then there was a late interception that sealed the win for Liberty. But, man, Clovis had them on the ropes. That was just one of those games that, you know, comes down to a play here, play there. I know that Saldade had a 90-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. So, man, Coach Aaron Wilkins, he's got that program turned around really, really close to upsetting Liberty on the road. So Central is going to be playing Liberty. Clovis East, Sanger, the game that we're going to be talking with Coach Nagel about at the top of hour number two, a game that we broadcasted. Again, that one came down to wire. Tommy Nix had a long touchdown catch. Actually, it was a short touchdown catch. And then he ran, I think it was 61 yards for a touchdown in that one, and then made the game-sealing tackle. Just talk about the tale of two halves. It was all Clovis East in the first half, all Sanger in the second half. Clovis East recovered a fumble. Sanger was at the 10-yard line, recovered a fumble, and Sanger had one more chance. And Clovis East defense, they made the plays when they had to, when it mattered the most. They'll be taking on Clovis North, who dismantled Clovis West 34-0. That rushing game, 5 more touchdowns. McKay Madsen with 3 touchdowns. Jackson Sinfell, 161 yards, 2 touchdowns. Clovis West couldn't get anything going. So who's going to beat the Broncos? Who can beat the Broncos? That is one of the big questions this week. They're rolling 11-0 in the season, ranked in the top 10 in the state. Division 2 on Thursday, Centennial defeated Madera 42-7. Lemoore defeated Sunnyside 38-22. Centennial, yeah, they're looking pretty strong. They're fully healthy. Madera, that had a great win against Bakersfield Christian last week, but they fall in Bakersfield again. Lemoore had a fumble recovery for a touchdown and a kickoff return for a touchdown. They're usually good for that every game. Defeated Sunnyside again, 38-22. So those two teams are going to be playing each other. Centennial's a 3 seed, so Lemoore gets the home as being the 2 seed. And last night, there were a couple games last night. One that I said that I drove to, Central Valley Christian, defeated Tatch. It'd be 48-27. It was closer than that, though, guys. But I saw one of the great playoff performances I've ever seen. Last year, Brandon Ramirez for San Joaquin Memorial had those incredible games. This was kind of like it. Bryson Donaldson committed to play at Fresno State, rushed for 390 yards and 6 touchdowns. It was a Bryson Donaldson show. Whenever they needed a big play, whenever Tehachapi kept creeping back, just give the ball to number 6, let him do the rest. It certainly did. He's a stud. They got a good one. He's got that next gear that you look for in running backs. I tried to explain the best I could to somebody on the sidelines, a buddy of mine that I was able to watch the game with. It's like Bryson, when he gets to that second level, it's like when you punch it when you're in a Tesla and you feel that, or you're on a roller coaster and it really takes off. That's what it felt like watching Bryson Donaldson. He's got that second gear, and once he gets past that second level, he's gone. Nobody's going to touch him. So what an incredible game from Donaldson. Tulare Union in a tough one. Oh, my gosh, we were keeping track of that one last night. Defeated Kingsburg 49-42. Kingsburg actually had it tied at 30-35. Tulare Union, yeah, they're tough at home. They ended up with the final touchdown to win that one, 49-42. So it's going to be Tulare Union visiting Central Valley Christian, and like I said, in Division II, Centennial at Lemoore. In Division III, we're going to be talking with Coach Jenkins after the break about that great game. They defeated Kennedy again, 34-28. Mission Oak defeated Mount Whitney, 35-12. Mission Prep defeated Porterville, 15-14. All right. I only got about 30 seconds here to describe this play. So apparently, Porterville was driving. They had the ball at the 3-yard line, and they ran out of time. They lost by 1 point. They could have kicked a field goal to win it, could have ran one more play to try to win the game, but time ran out before they were able to hike the ball. So Mission Prep advances, and they're going to be playing Kerman. Washington Union, oh, these guys, they go 3-7. Barely make the playoffs, beat Atascadero, the 2 seed, 41-13. Crazy, crazy. So it's going to be Mission Oak and Washington Union in D3, Kerman and Mission Prep. In D4, Dos Palos defeated Santa Maria, 45-28. Exeter defeated Roosevelt, 45-22. Shafter, who's going to beat Shafter, just like the questions we have about Clovis North, who's going to beat the Broncos. Those guys are rolling. The Generals defeated Golden Valley, 45-7. And Torres in a mild upset. The 5 seed beat the 4 seed, 21. At Kalinga, 19. Division 5, Bishop defeated North, 55-43. Liberty Madera, Coach Nolte doing a great job there, defeated Chavez, 34-31. Morro Bay over Rossi, 35-25. Wasco defeated Reedley, 20-21. I believe there was a fumble recovery that Wasco got and scored a touchdown on it. That was a difference in that one. In Division 6, Arvin defeated Orange Coast, 56-35. Fowler defeated Boron, 43-36. Bubba Smith had 3 rushing touchdowns and a passing touchdown in that one. And Mendota defeated Taft, 42-28. Strathmore defeated Woodlake, 27-21. Let me get those playoff matches set. So Exeter's going to be at Dos Palos. That's a 3-2. Torres is a 5 seed, is at number 1 Shafter. That's Division 4. Division 5, Morro Bay versus Bishop. Wasco versus Liberty Madera. Division 6, Mendota and Fowler. And Strathmore at Arvin. All right, that's a fairly quick recap of the games from Thursday and a couple from Friday night. After the break, we're going to talk with Damon Jenkins about that awesome, wild win that Kerman had over Kennedy. After the break on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. Try to give as quick of a rundown as I could with those high school games played on Thursday and Friday night of this week. And I always feel like I run out of time with that. But, hey, no better people to talk about the games at than the coaches themselves. And right now we have Ackerman head coach Damon Jenkins on the line. The Lions won that wild one at Kennedy to advance to the D3 semifinals at number one Mission Prep. I can't get over how incredible that last play was. Can't wait to talk to Coach Jenkins about it. But, Coach, man, when you woke up this morning, I don't know, you probably woke up super early to get going on watching game film, get your team prepared. But when you woke up this morning, man, what was going through your mind? How are you feeling?
I mean, we're feeling pretty good. I actually started my game prep yesterday because we had Friday off. So.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling because we got our kids in here right now. Just to see their faces when they walked in here this morning to know that, you know, we got one more week to play. Hopefully two more weeks. But just to see their faces coming here and the smiles on their faces, the energy, it's all worth it. All the sacrifices that they've made throughout the summer and throughout the school year, it's been a blessing. So.
Well, let's talk about that game against Kennedy. We know how tough they are. They run that wing T style of offense. The defending champs are tough. They're tough to beat at home. What was the game plan going into that game and stopping their offense?
I mean, just really just putting guys in position just to get downhill. I mean, like you said, they're a tough team to beat, especially at home. With their crowd, the stands, and everything, you know, they have a lot going on there. But it's a great atmosphere to play in. But we just wanted to try to get kids downhill. I mean, they have a very good offensive line. They have a very good running back. He pretty much carries their offense. So for us, we had to try to stop the run. We knew that they were going to get 2-3 yards. We just had to make sure that they didn't get any big runs to kind of, you know, get the crowd going on their side. So we just want to limit him as much as possible.
And the game's tied 21 at half, and then you guys find yourselves down – tied to 21, and then you find yourselves down 28-21 entering the fourth quarter. So what are you and your staff telling your kids, like, hey, dig deep, this is fourth quarter football? What were you telling your kids before the fourth quarter?
I mean, nothing, really. I mean, we just kept playing. I mean, I have a very good group of kids. They're extremely resilient. And for us, we've been through these situations, and I tell these kids all the time, don't hang your head. We have to have the next play mentality. And that's what they did. Like, you didn't hear anybody, you didn't see anybody panicking. You didn't hear any kids, saying any negative things. They just were like, hey, let's go. Cheering on the offense, cheering on the defense, staying in the game. And, you know, they end up pulling it out. So.
And so it looks like Kennedy, after you guys tied the game at 28, Kennedy turned the ball over on a missed field goal with under a minute to play. So explain what went on late in the fourth quarter in that game.
Yeah, so we end up – they end up missing the field goal. So in our mind, we were going to try to go down there and score. We had a few big plays, and we had two penalties back, if I'm not mistaken. So on that actual last – we were just trying to get the ball down the field. You know, I think we have one more timeout left. So we were trying to get the ball down the field. But on that last play, it was like, okay, hey, you know what, just hand the ball off. Let's just go – let's go into overtime. And then Coach McCoy called the kids up and, you know, he's like, hey, take care of the ball. And he goes, we're just going to run it out, go to OT. And then one of our offensive linemen, Raymond Sanchez, says, not if we end it here. So sure enough, they hand the ball off and Julian takes it. I think it was a 75-yard run or something of that nature. So, but.
Okay, Coach. I still can't, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. And you were there, you're coaching the guys, but. I mean, have you ever seen a 75-yard walk-off, so to speak, rushing touchdown as time expired? How wild is that?
No, that's my first. I actually was telling Coach McCoy that in all the years I've played and all the years I've coached, I've never seen that actually happen in the game. And so for that to happen, and to the young man that it happened to, you know, it's just an awesome feeling. He's one of our hardest workers. And people look at his size and they may not think much. But he's one of the top running backs in the Valley. I think we have a good group of running backs, but he's probably one of the top in the Valley. But just to see that in that nature, in that fashion, in a playoff game, was a wonderful feeling. So.
You're talking about Julian Velez, your running back.
Yes, sir.
I mean, at what point did you think that he could take it to the house? Like after he got past the line of scrimmage? Because he was almost untouched all the way to the end zone, made a couple moves late, but at what point did you think, oh my gosh, he's going to do it?
Once he got past the safety. So this is the funny part. So I'm sitting there, I'm watching the run actually happen. I'm like, all right, he got past the first level. All right, there's no linebackers there. And then it was like, oh my God. It's like, all he needs to do is beat the safety. So once he beats the safety, we all start sprinting down to the end zone. I was sprinting because my trainer, he was on the sideline, and I didn't want him to run into the ref. So if my trainer, then the ref was right next to him. And so we're running, and I'm trying to get him out of the way. And then as I'm running down, I actually pull both my hamstrings. And so, you know, I fell to the ground. It was a memorable moment. You had Coach McCoy run over there and do a karate kick in the air. You had all the kids run off the field to the celebrate with Julian. So that last drive and how it happened and everything that transpired, like I said, is a very memorable moment for our kids and our program.
Absolutely. That is the stuff of legends. That is something that's going to go down in Kerman lore for a long time. So what – describe the celebration or describe what the locker room talk or the bus ride home was about. I mean, was it just pure jubilation and joy?
Yes, especially last year, us going down to Kennedy, and they put it to us pretty good last year. And so we knew going into this game, we were going to have, you know, some solid practices. We knew the kids are going to have to show up, bring the good energy, and just play hard. And so after the game in the locker room, we've been talking about this. You know, I told the kids that you guys got to play for each other, and you guys do it for each other. And we did that. We never, you know, stopped believing. Finished the game, and the kids were excited. You know, music was playing in the locker room after the game. And again, when you see the smiles on our kids' faces, that makes it all worth it. And then again, this morning they came in here, we're lifting, and they're again same energy, same smile on their face. So it warms my heart to see that.
You know, live to practice a couple more times and play one more game, Coach. You know, I had you on the show about a month ago, and you were coming off of a win against Hanford West, but you had that gauntlet of four games. Let me just remind everybody out there, four-game stretch of Sunnyside, one point loss to Sunnyside. You're playing Clovis. You played Clovis East and lost to them, who now they're playing Clovis North in the semifinals of D1. Lost to Central Valley Christian, number one team in D2, and you lost to Kingsburg only by six. But after that, you reeled off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wins in a row. You know, do you think that four-game stretch just toughened up your kids? You think that you just made them more cohesive as a group?
Yes, I think when they realize how good they actually can be when they work together, I think that's really what helped them. A lot of people don't know that our first five games, we were down like six or seven kids, or actually up to eight kids in the Sunnyside game. So we were down a lot of guys at the first half of the season, but we never backed down. You know, our kids kept going, the next man stepped up, and I think our kids seeing that and having that mentality and not complaining, just coming to work every single day and working hard, they grew together. I mean, that's really what a lot of my foundation about a bit of my program is. It's all about them, right? Yes, there's the coaches there, but it's all about them. How are they going to choose to operate within each other? And they stuck it out. You know, they became closer. And I think, like you said, I think it really hit our team in that Kingsburg game. In that Kingsburg game, we actually turned the ball over three times. If we don't turn the ball over those three times, we win that ball game. And then for us, I think that was really the turning point, is knowing like, oh, okay, we can play with Kingsburg. And so after that, these kids just started, you know, reeling them off. So,
talking with Damon Jenkins, the head coach at Kerman High. A couple more minutes here, Coach. All right, what do you know about Mission Prep? They're the number one team in Division III. What's the early word on those guys?
I mean, it's going to be another tough game for us. I mean, they like to run the ball. They're going to run it, smash my football, and they're going to try to run it down our throats. I mean, they got a little bit of wing tee to them, but I think that's their staple, is running the ball. So we're going to have to stop the run again this week to the best of our abilities and go out there and play all four quarters again. So especially on special teams, offense and defense.
So you're one win away from playing in the Central Section Championship game. It probably didn't seem like that would even be mentioned about a month ago. But what would it mean to your program and to your staff and the school to play in that championship game?
I think it'll be huge. And from my understanding, Kerman has never made it to the Valley Championships. I think they've always just made it to the semifinals, but they can never get to the finals. So, for these kids to be able to get to that point, that's something we've talked about all year long. That's one thing when I did take this job, that my goal was to get these guys to a Valley Championship, win it, and move on to being a better thing. The kids, you know, win Valley, possibly go to state, see how far we can go in state. But for our kids, I mean, this would be a great, great opportunity for them to be able to play in that final game. And not only that, just the community of Kermit. They've been supporting our kids all year long, and our fans and our student body and our admin. So I think it'd be a great thing for our program.
Oh, great stuff. We're big fans of you, Coach Jenkins. Always appreciate you, and you've done a wonderful job with the program. And, man, that win against Kennedy will live forever in your minds and your memories. Congratulations, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
You bet. Anytime. All right, Coach Jenkins, Kerman, they're doing it, man. They're going to go play Mission Prep. They're going to try to slay another giant. All right, talking about slaying giants, huh? Central, they've slayed giants. They've been the giant many, many years. Central Grizzlies coach Kyle Biggs coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN.
1430 ESPN, home of March Madness.
Kermit Lyons, great story. We always root for the underdogs, right? Especially when they win on a crazy play, 75-yard touchdown run. They're trying to run out the clock and play for overtime. Their dude takes it to the house. Just had a great conversation with Coach Jenkins about that. We had another great one. Wasn't at that game, but following closely on Twitter on Thursday night, Central Grizzlies defeat Frontier on the road, 36-32. Got Coach Kyle Biggs on the show right now, three-time Division I Central Section champ. Got that state championship that was awesome in 2019. We're going to be traveling to Bakersfield again to take on number 3 Liberty. Coach Biggs is kind enough to join us on the show. What's going on this morning, Coach?
Not much, man. Just checking out some Penn State, Michigan, and some Liberty for them.
All right, you got an update for me? I can't see the TV from here. What's the score?
Last time I saw it, it was 10-14, I believe. Michigan.
Okay, Michigan's up. Where's Harbaugh?
Not there.
Not there. Somewhere else. Watching the game, probably trying to get some signals down somehow. All right, that's a whole different story. Crazy stuff going on there. All right. So again, you guys had that great game against Frontier. You dialed up. We're going to get into the last drive in just a second. But going against Frontier, they're the 2 seed. They had that win against Liberty, 25-20. They're undefeated. They're Division II last year, so they moved up to Division I. You guys are perennial Division I powerhouse. But what did you see on film about Frontier before the game? What were some of their strengths? What were some things that you tried to exploit?
They have some athletes. They have some really good skill players. Their quarterback is really good. Their offensive line was really good. And they played hard. So we knew it was going to be a tough game. But we also knew, we've been playing tough games for the last 6 weeks. We played Liberty the last game of non-league, and then the track, is above anything else around this in this area as far as league games go. So we knew we were prepared. They'd only played one tough game, we thought, all year. So we didn't think they were going to be as well-equipped to play that game as we were.
How did you frame that game to the team, like pregame speech, just went in with full confidence, or how did you frame that game going down to Bakersfield?
We feel like if we play our best game, we can play with anybody and beat anybody. So that's just our mindset: go out and play our best game, and let the chips fall where they may.
And you guys punched them in the mouth pretty early, right? 8-0. Did you guys score and then got a 2-point conversion?
Yeah, it wasn't planned a bad snap, and then Dave just kind of made a play and got in for the 2-point conversion.
And you guys then went up 22-10, and they scored a late touchdown in the first half to make it 22-17. So walk us through the first half. Was it more of just – obviously you had that 12-point lead. I'm sure you're pretty upset about giving up that late touchdown. But was it more of like, we're just kind of feeling each other out a little bit, or you're checking out their defense and seeing what types of adjustments they're making in game? So how do you describe the first half?
We were moving the ball around. We were moving the ball up and down the field. Just couldn't kind of finish drives and had some, differences of opinion with the officials, as that goes when you're down in Bakersfield. So it kind of stalled a few drives for us, and we felt like they were kind of getting the benefit of those calls, especially on when they were on offense. But that's just how it's going to go down there. So we were just, we knew it was going to be a dogfight. They scored with about 3 minutes left in half, and we were going to go try to, you know, get a touchdown and kind of, you know, end the ball with the half, because we knew they got the ball to start the second half. But then we scored on, like, our third play of the drive and just, you know, left a minute and a half for them, and then we didn't cover the kick very well, and they had good field position. And, you know, they make a lot of plays outside of the playbook, if that makes sense. Playground-ish, sandlot,
yeah.
Trent Tompkins style, you know, just guys making plays. And their quarterback made a play on one of the last plays of the first half on fourth down, and they were able to score and get within, you know, five to make it 17-22.
And that quarterback's good, Statler. I've been watching him for the last couple of years online, and he's put up some incredible stats. So, like you said, you know, Trent Tompkins was a kid that can improvise and make plays and scramble around for about 37 seconds and then throw a 72-yard touchdown pass. Was that the type of skill set that he had? Are those types of guys, you know, pretty difficult to defend, or you put a spy on him, or how do you defend a kid like that?
No, you know, he really hadn't shown that ability all year on tape, and I think that's more or less because of the opponents they faced that he didn't have to. You mainly just sat back there and picked people apart. So that was something that we just saw firsthand. He had some good escapability and playmaking ability, and we just kind of had to try to figure it out as the game went on.
So you guys took a 29-25 lead with about 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and then Frontier marches down the field and scores a touchdown with about a little over a minute left in that game. So you guys have one more drive basically to score. How many timeouts did you have on that last drive, and what type of plays did you dial up to drive down the field?
I mean, we had one timeout. They kicked the ball out of bounds, so that helped put us at the 35 and didn't run any time off the clock. And they were just playing press man with two high safety, so just trying to find the best matchup. And we were able to find it, got a big play on third down. And then Dave got loose, and everyone's in man-to-man, so he broke free on a scramble. Should have got out of bounds, but didn't. I didn't use the timeout because I wanted to have it in my hip pocket in case we got tackled inside the 10-yard line on the next play. And, you know, miraculously, after the first down, Frontier called a timeout right before the snap.
Wow.
And 15 seconds, miraculously, ran off the clock in between a first down and a timeout. And the refs had no explanation for that.
That's wild. So was it with 22 seconds left, you guys were lined up for a 23-yard pass to Marquez to Hall?
Yeah, it was about 20 seconds left, and we had the play dialed up. And I don't think Dave listened to anything I told him in the huddle. The read he made wasn't the read he was supposed to make, but when you throw a perfect ball, I guess it doesn't matter, because that's exactly what he did. He stood in the pocket and threw a perfect ball. That's not coaching.
Dave
making a good play.
I know, and I encourage everybody out there, you know, to try to find that play on Twitter. I know Central's tweeted it out. I've retweeted it. I think Gabe has as well. I mean, you talk about a perfect throw. Where was Braylon lined up on that play? Was he slot or was he outside?
He was a slot. He was the slot receiver closest to the quarterback in our trips formation. And he just beat his guy off the ball, and Gage put it in the only spot he could. And it was a great ball. He stood in the pocket and delivered a dime.
So after that play, was it more relief for you or joy, or were you just like, oh my gosh, the game's not completely over, but I think we got it? What was the sentiment like on the sidelines?
I mean, it was euphoria, really. It was kind of just craziness, because I told the officials before the drive started, like, there's two football teams out here battling out, and the officials are deciding the game, and it's not right. And so that, I was more relieved that we overcame the poor officiating than anything else. Just the fact that we pulled it out, kids showed a lot of moxie, a lot of grit, a lot of fight, and you know, that's what it takes to win in the playoffs.
And can you point to any part in that game that really made a difference? Maybe there was a guy that made a big stop on fourth down for you on defense, or, you know, obviously that last play of the game is a game winner. But was there another play throughout that game that kind of stands out to you as being a game changer?
We weren't able to run the ball all game, and we got a stop. We got a three and out when we needed it the most by the defense, and they forced a punt, and they changed their defense up on the drive, and we were able to pop some runs in our O-line, and David Bell and Brandon Smith popped two runs that got us into their territory really fast. And then Dave threw a jump ball basically to Zeb White, our sophomore wide receiver, and Zeb came down with a miraculous acrobatic catch that put us on the one-yard line to score that go-ahead touchdown with about 4 minutes left. So I think in that sequence, the defense stepped up, the O-line, the running back stepped up and did their job, and then Zeb stepped up with a big catch to kind of give us the lead back.
So, Coach, what point in the season? I know we've talked about this a bit, but, I point to that Buchanan game where 0-0 at half, and he came out with Marquez, and it's been lights out since. Would you agree with that assessment that since that point in the season, you guys have just played your best football of the year?
I think it's. I don't think necessarily it's the quarterback switch. I think it's just more of the reality of what we're in, man. I mean, our league was a dogfight, and we knew we had to play our best and be our best in every situation, and just the focus that it took and the mindset that it took to be great, that we had to be focused and dialed in each and every play. And, and I think Dave played really, really well for coming in the situation he was in. And the guys have really rallied behind him. And he's just he's a no-nonsense guy. He doesn't talk, doesn't say a lot. He just goes out there and tries to make every play he can make.
And it's been said that you need your seniors to make a deep run in the Central Section playoffs. And how important is that senior leadership? You got your receivers talk about Braylon and Noe, and you used to talk about Dave and how his play is on the field. But you need your seniors to step up, and there's no replacement for experience, is there?
No, there's not. And I mean, you don't have to be a senior to be a leader either. You just need leaders to step up. Brandon Smith's a sophomore, but he's a leader on our defense. He plays his tail off on both sides of the ball, and it's a player's game. I mean, they gotta lead, and they gotta want it more than you do. That's what it comes down to.
I want to talk about that future game against Liberty in just a second, but you mentioned how tough the track was this season, and it's no secret that the league was extremely balanced this year. You've played Clovis East, and you beat them in that great game at home. You played Clovis North. You lost 27-20 in that one, a game that I was able to watch. It's no secret what North's going to do. How did those games and those, playing the different styles of Clovis East and Clovis North and even Clovis West, how do those prepare you for the playoffs?
I mean, just the like I said, the fight, you got to be in it. You got to be dialed in. You can't give up any mistakes, or the teams are going to make you pay for those mistakes. Got to play 48 minutes of football. Got to have good week of practice. Got to watch film. You just got to do all the little things that championship teams do. And it doesn't hurt that, you have Clovis East, you can throw the ball. Clovis West can throw the ball. Buchanan was very good offensive line and had a very good run game and a very good defense. And then Clovis North is smash mouth with a very good defense. So you get to see all types of football. You get to test your teams in all types of different ways. And so by the time you get to where you are in the playoffs, you've kind of seen everything, throughout the league season to prepare you for the playoffs and trying to finish the year strong.
So East is playing North in that top bracket. How tough is it to play, to game plan against a team like North, where it's really no secret what they're going to do? How tough is it to game plan against them? And what do you think Clovis East has to do to try to upset them?
Well, Clovis East did a really good job the first time they played. Did a really good job defensively. They had guys in the backfield, but they missed a few tackles, and those running backs are really good, and they made a miss, and they were able to turn those, TFLs into 5, 6, 7, 8, 12-yard gains, and those help prolong drives. So I think Clovis East had a really good game plan going in, and Clovis North just made a few more plays than they did. I'll say this. It's a lot tougher to game plan for the team you beat than it is to game plan for a team you lost to. Because you know what you did wrong, you know what you need to improve on, you know what you need to fix. When you win, you know, sometimes you overlook what you did wrong. So I'll say it's a lot easier. I think it's easier for Clovis East to game plan for Clovis North than it is for Clovis North to game plan for Clovis East. Because Clovis North had success, are they going to change things? You don't know. Clovis East, they didn't have success. Are they going to change things? Are you going to get the same look? Are you going to get the same fronts, the same coverages? So there's a lot of question marks that you have to answer.
Talking with Coach Kyle Biggs of Central, and speaking of rematches, all right, let's talk about next week a little bit. So Liberty, they're very familiar to you guys. You guys went down there on September 15th, and they beat you 35-14. I could tell you from my perspective, you guys are a totally different team. Seems like there are some chinks in Liberty's armor right now. What are you guys going to have to do to, you know, to go down there and not only, you know, control the line of scrimmage and make plays, but come out with a victory in Bakersfield?
I mean, we just got to play hard football. I mean, that's all it comes down to. They're very well coached. They're a very good team. I felt like the first time we played them, they wanted it more than we did. So I'm hoping that we got some our juices flowing and our chip on our shoulder and a little bit of anger going this week that we're going to be able to use to fuel our fire on the bus trip down there and we play our best football.
Why do you guys think you're going to beat them?
I just think we have a different mindset this time around. Yeah. We've kind of figured out who we are and what we do well. And we're just going to go out there and make plays. Like, that's what it comes down to. We got to make plays. Kids have been in position to make plays. Sometimes we make plays, sometimes we don't. And we just have to have the mindset that we're going to make those plays this week. And those plays are going to be the difference in the game.
What do you got going the rest of the day, Coach? You got some softball to do with your daughter? You're going to watch some college football, game plan, all of the above?
No, my daughter's down in Riverside for a softball tournament. So I'll be getting some video text messages, updates of her at bats, and just watch some football and continue breaking down Liberty and just get our mind right for our coaches meeting for tomorrow.
And how's Jalen Johnson do? I heard he was on the news. Scott Bemis interviewed him and had a little shout out to Central Football. But how's Jalen doing?
He's awesome, man. He's always taking care of us. He actually bought our team meal this week. He was back in town a day after they played on Thursday night for his Kevy's Vision. He's such a great young man. Gives back to our community, gives back to our kids. He's such an inspiration for our kids to look up to. Can't say enough good things about Jalen. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's the best. And Trent Tompkins, looks like he's scoring a touchdown every which way but loose. Still for Davis, he's in a little bit of everything too, isn't he?
Yeah, him, Jeremiah, Xavier, Ricky, they're all doing great. I'm excited for those guys as they continue to get ready to play for the next level.
Yeah, Ricky, he's getting a lot of playing time for Cal, isn't he?
Ricky's doing awesome, man. He's finally healthy. He's always been a beast and a stud. He's doing a great job in the classroom. He's going to get his degree here in the next year. Super proud of him.
That's awesome. Well, Coach, good luck the rest of the way. Always love chatting it up with you. It's an incredible, incredible win that you had on Thursday night. Good luck the rest of the way, and always appreciate you.
All right, man. Tell Gabe, keep picking against us.
Hey, I'm going to snap a picture of my bracket. I have on my desk at school. I did it. I promise. I dated it before the season, before the playoffs started. I got you going all the way to the championship game. So that's me.
All right. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Coach Kyle Biggs, Central Grizzlies. All right. All right. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking Clovis East football. We've got Coach Brandon Nagel and Tommy Nix coming in live here at First String Sports. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, on 1430 ESPN. About the Tehachapi. Obviously, they're quite a ways away, east of Bakersfield. But, you know, I was at the CVC and Tehachapi game last night. A lot of talk about that. They were 10-0, got the 9 seed. They had to travel to Bakersfield. They beat Bakersfield, right? Historic win for them. Then they got to face number one, Central Valley Christian. So a couple things first before I get into how awesome Tehachapi, their football team was, and their fan support was. The Central Section has to go by the computer rankings, right? And Ryan Toss, the commissioner of the Central Section, went on Gabe's show and said, hey, there were two games that we wish we could change. There's nothing in the bylaws that allowed us to change this. First of all, it was Hanford not hosting a football game. They went 9-1. They were the ninth seed, had to travel to play Clovis West. The other one was Tehachapi. They go undefeated. They have to go on the road as a ninth seed. And there was nothing they could do. Their hands were tied. It's voted on by the League of Managers. But Tehachapi, they were as advertised. They were tough. They were hard-nosed. They played the game hard. They had that wing tee offense. It was tough to stop. They had a dude named A.J. Anderson that rushed for 251 yards against Central Valley Christian. They were in this game. It was 20-14. They were driving. They fumbled the ball at the five-yard line. Could have been. That was a difference maker. Fumbled the ball, and Central Valley Christian recovered, scored a touchdown. They made it 26-14 at halftime. But any other team they're playing in Division II, other than CVC, I think that game is much tighter. Bryson Donaldson was a huge factor, but the fan support from Tehachapi was phenomenal. They drove 2.5 hours for that game. The whole side, the opposite side, the visitor side, was packed. They had signs. They were cheering. They were cheering when they stopped Donaldson for a couple one-yard gains. They were cheering on those types of plays. It was awesome. It was great, great atmosphere for high school football. And the coaching staff for Tehachapi, they were all wearing shorts. I'm sure they do that at all their games. That's probably their thing. That's the tough guy mentality that they have. So hats off to Tehachapi. Unfortunately, they had to play the number one seed, Central Valley Christian, but man, that program was locked and ready to go this season. Unfortunately, it had to end last night. We just wanted to say that. All right, Clovis East coach Brandon Nagel coming on. Tommy Nix, they're here live at First String Sports. After the break, 1430 ESPN. Isaiah Robles on the outside. I think it was about 3-yard line. Is that where that was? Yep. 3-yard line. And now you guys take on Clovis North. So Coach Nagel sat this. I posted this on Twitter, and it's still true. My timeline is all jacked up. Like, yesterday I thought it was Saturday all day. It's strange. Today's Saturday, right? And you guys, because you played football on Thursday,
yeah,
and then had Friday off, and then Saturday.
Yeah, it was. I actually woke up yesterday, and I thought I had to be here at 11, and then I realized, oh, it's Friday. So I was really confused yesterday. So it feels like a Sunday today.
It does, and there's college football, which is a good thing. But you got a chance to watch your son play a little soccer this morning. That was a treat. Amoeba soccer, right? 5 years old?
Oh, yeah. It's just everybody chases the ball, and but it's exciting. You know, I don't get very often on Saturdays to go see him play, so it was cool today to go see him play.
You're either kicking the ball or kicking some other kid's shins,
yep,
right? I remember those days. All right, so, Coach, well, first of all, welcome, Tommy. We're going to have a lot of fun today. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, you bet. So you've had a full day, Coach. You know, yesterday you thought it was Saturday, but it was Friday. You had a full day to kind of reflect on some things, I'm sure, from that crazy game against Sanger. So, you know, I mean, what was your feeling? What was running through your mind mostly after that football game?
Man, there was a lot of emotions. You know, you get the stop and all that, and then obviously we had some penalties because of the celebration and stuff, and so I didn't really get a chance to really enjoy it. It was, you know, trying to get, I think they put the ball on the 2-yard line, so we had to take a knee and try not to get a safety and those things. And so yesterday was actually the first time I've actually, like, wow, we won the game, you know. My emotions, I didn't even sleep that night. I was just, you know, you worry about everything, you think about everything. And so yesterday was kind of nice to actually relax and say, oh man, wow, we're moving on to the next round. So,
and that, you're right, I didn't hit on that at all. I did during the broadcast because there was a timeout when you guys had to snap the ball a couple times. The first ball was at around the 3-yard line, and obviously everything you do is in shotgun, right? And so they're like, what are you going to do, right? I mean, the safety, you still would have a lead, but, you know, that could lead to other things. And I saw Ty Miller practicing getting under the center because there was a timeout and working on some things. And what were you trying to – were you just, like, scrambling, like, okay, we got to go under center? Or is that something that you've practiced in the past?
Yeah, Coach Hunter does a good job with that, and that's why he had them doing that. They were practicing their snaps because, obviously, I had to go talk to the ref, and it actually gave some time, you know, and I'm trying to get guys on the sideline. I think, you know, you had some young kids up, and I think they thought the clock ran out or something.
Yeah.
You know, they were celebrating it was over, and it wasn't. And so I'm trying to calm players down and all that, and then I look over there, and Coach Hunter, you know, being pretty calm, had Ty taking snaps because he knew what he needed to do. And that, you know, and they did a good job with
that. Yeah, he did. So. And it worked out. There was no disaster averted on that. So, Tommy Nix, you had that great play to end the game, basically, right? Basically end the game. You had a 59-yard touchdown catch as well. Coach Nagel hasn't stopped thinking about that game. How about you? Have you just like, man, that was a crazy game. What's been going through your mind about that game against Sanger?
Really, just after you got that victory, just my mind just focused on North because, you know, game's already over with, you know. Just got to, like, put your mind to the next game, you know. It's over. You can't really, you know, just got to move on. So
celebrate for a little bit and get ready for the next game.
Pretty much.
All right. So let's go ahead and jump into that last sequence, Coach. We'll get into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts during the game. But Sanger's driving. It's first and goal from the 10, I believe, 17-14. All the momentum is on their side. I believe they run the ball for about 5 yards to make it second and goal from the 5. And then stop, right?
Right.
Let's go to that final play then. It's fourth down. It's the game, 3-yard line. I believe there was a timeout before that play, right?
Right.
They had called it? Sanger called it?
I think they did, yeah.
I think they did.
Might have. I was trying to stop the clock and have a little bit of time just in case it did score, but yeah, one of us called timeout.
There was some confusion on the big scoreboard. Like, they didn't put the timeouts to the right. So anyway, we were trying to decipher that. Okay, so there was a timeout. You know, you're a defensive guy. What are you telling your guys? I've seen Sanger come out of timeouts and do some funky things. They could do some rollouts, some sprints, and different things like that. What are you telling your guys?
I thought they would attack that edge over there. They've been going like what you know, like that little stack formation, twin stack thing, and so I thought it was either you know, or they played Garza a lot the week before and kind of did it on I think a 4th and 3 through a little shoot route to their fullback or tailback right there, and so I just thought that would be the side they would attack, and so. We were just talking about it's either going to be that toss or it was going to be something over there. And so we kind of guessed, you know, so everybody kind of bounced that way. And then it just came down to effort, and Tommy just made a decision to take on that block and get off the block and make the tackle, and everybody rallied. And so, really, you can see it was all the coaches, but really it was just this guy over here deciding that he wanted to end the game and go home.
And he lined up. Where exactly did he line up on that?
He was just he's our free safety this game, so he's on the weak side, and so his job was to set that edge to that weak side of the run. And they do a good job of getting pullers and getting up on us, and they were doing it all night, and that's why I kind of figured that's probably what they're going to do. I mean, they literally were getting 5-6 yards every time they ran that play.
And what I loved about the play that Tommy made is that he made the play. Like, he just went up and hit number 22 and took him to the ground. So. Explain what you saw on that play.
Really, we've just been going over it during practice all week. So, really, it was just in my mind already to keep running the same play all drive. So, coach just put me in the right alignment and then just had to capitalize in the moment, just put me in position, just how to make a play. So,
do you feel like everything was instinctual on that play? Like, hey, the ball's coming this way. There it is. I'm going to go blow him up.
Yeah, pretty much. That was pretty much my mindset, just getting this stop. So, really just proud of what happened that day. So,
what was the celebration like after the game when you guys could finally, like, oh, yeah, we won the game? What was that celebration like?
Celebration was pretty nice. It was, like, a lot of players are excited, you know, kind of, like, changing the program around because we haven't won a playoff game in 15 years. So, it's good to see, you know, my teammates happy and stuff, and I just want to change the program around. So.
And you definitely have your difference maker on both sides of the ball. So, Coach, I texted you after the game about 45 minutes and asked you if you were available to come on the show, and you said I about died 3 times during the game. And I could see it. Right? We're broadcasting the game, and you were right there. I'm watching everything.
Yeah.
Just the back and forth, the momentum swings. You know, as a coach, how are you – it's just like, is this really happening, or are there just moments, Twilight Zone moments? What's going through your mind in games like that?
You know, I'm older these days, but I still feel like when I'm coaching, I'm playing. And so I get pretty emotional and get caught up in the moments and those things. And so I think what I was saying was I was trying to be the calm one. And then when it comes down to the end, now I'm reverting back to my old self and young self. And I'm now the crazy one, and now my coaches are telling me, you know, to calm down. And I think that's just why I coach. And I feel like if you have that passion and you that will to, and drive to win, then I'll keep coaching. You know, and I always say if I ever lose that, then that's probably the day I need to be done. But yeah, I just the emotions. I couldn't believe it. We were up 17-0, you know, and we knew they would fight back, but you know, we thought we could handle our business, and then Sanger just came back with fury, and so it was just crazy. It's just crazy. I can't even explain it. It's just it was all blur.
We'll try our best, but you got a player here to your right, to my left, who's an impact player, both sides of the ball, Tommy Nix. I had that 59-yard short touchdown, and I kind of called that. I'm going to give myself some props because you're missing on a lot of deep stuff, and I'm like, Ty Miller just got to complete a pass here. Like, just get something going, get the ball in your playmaker's hands. Sure enough, boom, slipped a couple dudes and took it to the house. So, Tommy, just from your perspective, the outside.
Really just – I know, like, it was 3-0. Our team needed, like, a play to make. And really, just when I got that ball, I just knew everybody trusted me with it and just believed in me to make a play. So just had to do what I do best and just make a couple guys miss. And, of course, just score a touchdown to get my team up.
What's going through your mind when all you see is green grass and the touchdown and maybe that side of La Monica Stadium? Is it just like, I'm just going to keep pumping my legs? What's going through your mind?
Really just running, I don't want to get like hawked down from the back or anything. So, you know, just make sure I keep running and score that touchdown. So,
yeah, I mean, if you get caught from behind your teammates, they're not going to let that go. I'm sure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Coach, talk about the impact that this guy makes on the football field.
Whew. I mean, there's so many things. It's more than just on the field. It's what he does in practice. You know, the things that people don't see. The things he does in the classroom, the things he does in the weight room. He does a good job. If guys get a little squirrely and things like that, he's the first guy to get guys focused. And he's probably one of the first players I had coached, you know, that's just all – it's all business. It's always football. And that's all he thinks about. That's all he cares about. And it's just – it's awesome. I mean, the guy eats and sleeps football. And you don't find those very often and these days, you know, with kids and all their technology and all their things. This guy's just football all the time.
Let's talk about that first half. Everything was working, wasn't it? Up 17-0. Defense was playing lights out. What was working so well in that first half, Coach?
I just think, you know, coming off a bye, we didn't know how it was going to go. You know, our kids have never been in a playoff game like that. They have never, you know, had a bye before. And so I think what worked in the first half, I just think adrenaline, and we were reading our keys, and we came out on fire, and we knew it was going to be a dogfight, and so I just think defensively we wanted to set a tone, and so that we knew if we could do that, then our offense would do their thing. So, but, yeah, the first half, just everything seemed to go the way we wanted it. That's sometimes how the ball falls in the first half.
And it was a rematch. It was a rematch from a game that we saw earlier. It was tied at half at 14, and you guys ended up with a 42-21 win. And we know Sanger's type of offense, and they'll just come at you. 22 is a really good, really good football player, tough to tackle. Did you have to make a lot of adjustments from that game to this game? I mean, it was August 31st was that game. You obviously watched a lot of film as well, but did you have to make a lot of adjustments going into that second game? Were you like, man, Sanger might make some adjustments, so we got to be prepared for this?
Yeah, definitely. We had to make some adjustments. Last time we, on their tight end wing stuff, we just didn't have the right edge that we wanted, and so we fixed some things up. Yeah, so I thought we did. I thought going into this, we had a way better game plan defensively this time around. You know, obviously just going through the track and all that as well and seeing some running teams, it helped set up for that. And then offensively, you know, we do what we do. And so we knew that they would probably have some changes as well from the first time. So it was just more of like, what were they going to do? You know, because we hadn't seen them since earlier in that season either.
And they did make a couple adjustments defensively, especially in that second half. All right, I got to ask you, though, second half, they asked, talk about it in the broadcast. What's Sanger going to have to do to get back in this football game? They said, they're going to need a big play, an interception return, a fumble return, a kickoff return, something like that to spark the team. Sure enough, kickoff goes all the way to the 5-yard line. You're shaking your head, and I think I know why. Team gives up a big play like that. Boom, you could feel the shift.
Yep.
Did you feel like, the kids didn't play hard on that kickoff? You didn't go out and smash. You didn't hit them when they're down, or you know what?
I just think, yeah, and it's, you know, and these guys are kids, and we had, you know, we'd been kicking over there all night, and so they did a good job of switching the returners right before the kick and making sure Carlos got it, yeah. And he did a good job, and, you know, we didn't run in our lanes, and they got through, and when you have a kid that's explosive like that, you got through, and we knew they were going to come back and fight, you know, but that really switched the momentum. It got down to two, and then the next play they score, so they're right back in the game, but, yeah, I mean, that happens in special teams. It's something we got to clean up. But, yeah, that was a big momentum shift in the game.
And, Tommy, when the game is tight like that, 17-14, coach just really gave you praise about how focused of a player you are on the field. You know, how are you feeling out there? Are you trying to, you know, encourage your teammates? Like, come on, guys, play hard on the next play. What's going through your mind when things aren't going your way?
Really, so as you can see in the game, we didn't really have a good second half, but – you know, whenever I've seen, like, somebody hold their head down or whatever, I really try to pick them up, you know, try to motivate our players because, you know, the game isn't over yet. We still got time. So just try to motivate them, really, because, you know, it came to the last play. So really just came down to, like, who wanted it more, and obviously it showed on the field. So.
Yeah, who wanted it more? And, I mean, watching that game, especially that last drive, I'll be honest, I thought Sanger was going to punch in. I'm being honest here. And when you guys made that play and saw you guys celebrate, I'm like, Sanger, gosh darn it, they did it. They won the game. And kept saying, too, Sanger had that, you know, that smash-mouth type football, but you guys were winning the game still, but it felt like you guys were down. Was that kind of like the momentum? Or like, how are we able to frame that?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I just think it's a game of emotions and a game of halves. And
yeah.
So I think our guys knew that we could stop them. And obviously, clearly, that's what happened. But, yeah, we knew. They were playing with momentum and we weren't. And we had our backs against the wall. But that's what we did. You know, we talk about it all the time. And that's why we did all the lifting that we did in offseason, all this. Because we knew there was going to come to a game where we're going to need everybody to step up and make a big play. And that's what they did. And that's why I was just such in shock. It was just awesome to see, you know, everybody – and the way they celebrated and just showed you how much these kids care and how much it means to them.
I want to explore that a little bit more. So first playoff win in 15 years.
Yeah.
15 years for Clovis East. Yeah. I mean, what does it mean to the program and to the school to win that playoff game?
I just think it just shows how hard, you know, the program had gone through a lot of change and with boundaries and things like that. And so it had a lot of down years. And that was my big goal coming in, was hiring – a good staff and creating a culture and getting, and, you know, and the weight room's always been there, but yeah. You know, getting those guys going and just adding those extra pieces. And so we've been waiting for that. And that's been our motto all year, is finishing the hunt, because last year we felt like we did some good things, but we didn't get to where we wanted to go. And so this year was taking that next step and, you know, winning the Silver Spear and then winning the boot and then winning a playoff game. I think that's how it goes in order, you know? And so we're really happy. But we're not settled. We're not satisfied yet. So
absolutely, talking with Brandon Nagel, head coach of Clovis East. We got Tommy Nix, star player, with us as well. All right, Tommy, what do you like better, NFL or college? What do you like to watch more?
Honestly, I like to watch college football more because really it's just what I'm going to play at the next level. So just looking at that atmosphere and just being around it, going like on visits, game visits and stuff, it's really just – it's exciting, and I just can't wait to, after senior year, just go out there and play at the next level. So.
All right, so you've done some game visits.
Yes, sir.
What schools have you gone to?
I've gone to USC, UC Davis, Sac State.
San Diego,
and that's it as of right now.
So you're able to stand on the sidelines and hang out there?
Yes, sir.
All right. You got a favorite college team?
Favorite college team? I'm going to have to go to Tennessee.
Why Tennessee?
Because my dad was, of course, from there, and then he's originally a Tennessee fan, so kind of got to continue the tradition, you know, so, yeah.
And they put up points now. Josh Heupel, huh? He's done something special over there, Tennessee. Coach, what do you like?
Oh, college all the way.
That's
college.
Answer.
Yeah, college in Alabama. So me and this guy, we fight all the time about stuff. So,
how'd you become interested in Alabama?
Oh, that's a long story. Yeah,
I want to hear it. Let's go.
My dad, I had some family back in Kentucky actually, but my dad bought me a Bear Bryant hat when I was a kid, And so I wore that, and I had no clue what it was. And then, you know, you get a little older, and you realize Alabama. And so it's been a long time. Everybody calls me a bandwagon guy, but I've liked them since I was a kid. So
you still have that hat?
No, I don't. No, I don't. So
got lost in a move here and there.
I did, yeah. So, but me and this guy, we go back and forth all the time. So.
Coach Nagel, what type of college program, I guess we could say, do you try to model your program after? Or is it just something, a hybrid that you've taken from everywhere that you've been and just made it your own?
Just made it our own. I wanted to be, you know, offensively, like you just said, like Josh, I wanted to be fast. I knew we had Ty in the program, and so I made sure I hired a coordinator that knew how to do tempo and do all those things and be up, you know, and fast and all those stuff. And then defensively, it's through the years, you know, being with Coach Simons and coaching with Coach Ferris and all these things and Coach Arax, and it's just a mixture of all these things I've learned. And, you know, Coach Hall, you know, Corey Hall back at North. So I've had a lot of different things that I've taken from that. And now with the offenses being, you know, spread out there, you got to be a little different, you know, in those ways. So this year we went some three safety stuff. And so we just keep going. We keep learning. I'm always, you know, looking at new stuff and trying to see what colleges are doing and adapt and try to make our program as college-like as possible, so kids, when they go to next level, understand those terms and terminology, because it makes it easier for them when they get there. So we make sure we're pretty close verbiage wise to some college stuff, so it's cool.
What are some examples of that? I hear that a lot, just verbalized. Is that play calls? Is that
like coverages? You know, we use, you know, it, the guy that does it all is Saban, you know, and then everybody's taking that from there and has their own, you know, and so you get their playbooks, and, you know, they have things called like cone and poach and solo and Robert, and you want to use those terms so kids understand what that is when they go there, you know, especially secondary guys, you know, Meg and all these things that we use. And I can say that, you know, when a parent comes to me and says, you know, well, what do we do? What do you guys do? And, you know, they're like, oh, well, we're helping kids not only in high school, we want to get them ready for college as well.
You got a college player right here as well, Tommy Nix. If whatever college he decides to go to, Coach, you know, you mentioned how serious he is, you know, what he can do on the football field. But, you know, it's not difficult to sell a kid like this to a college program, is it?
No, it's not. It's crazy. I would think you'd have 30 offers. You know, like I said, he's got 4.0. He eats, drinks, sleeps football. He studies. He works out. It's just everything. He checks all the boxes when it comes to that. And I, like I've said, I've been coaching 23 years, and I've maybe have like a handful of guys that I can say that were that, and he's one of them. And so it's really special to have that. I never have to worry about him, or, you know, what's he doing? Is he watching film or anything? Because I know he is. Yeah. So it's great and it's awesome. And I think it's made other players on our team step up because they see what he does.
Tommy, I want to ask you how Coach Nagel and his staff have helped develop you as a player. You're obviously a self-motivated guy. You're very goal-oriented as well. But how's Coach Nagel and Clovis East staff helped take your game to another level?
Really, like in practice, just like working on my technique, you know, lineman assignment, making sure I always know what I'm doing. So really just prepping me for college, you know. I think they did a pretty good job of that, as you can see. This season speaks for itself, but...
And I think before Thursday's game, you're averaging right around 19 yards per catch. You and Harold Duvall, 27 total touchdowns. Let's add another one to that. But talk about some of the dudes that you love playing with. You mentioned Ty Miller, and obviously Harold's a dude as well. So what's it like to play with those guys?
Really, Phil is great. You know, Tyus Miller, you know, I know that he's the best quarterback in the Valley right now, so couldn't be more thankful for him. You know, you got Harold Duvall, Aiden Wilson, you know, Blake Matthew, DJ Booker. We're pretty stacked on the receiver end. You know, really, it's just we challenge each other, you know, make each other better. And I just love those dudes. Those are my guys, you know. Also got to give credit to the linemen because, you know, without them, you know, we wouldn't be able to pass the ball or run the ball without them. So, you know, the Rosa brothers, Chase, everybody. So, yeah, just love
it. What's been, let's take away the Sanger play to end the game. I mean, that's an all-timer right there. That's going to go down in history. Is there another play this season that has been your favorite play? Maybe you've made a catch, or maybe you've had an interception. But has there been another play that sticks out to you this entire year?
My favorite play, I would probably say Clovis North game. It was a fly sweep, and then
yep,
I'd cut it back and then score. And then it was pretty great knowing that they're a pretty great team. I think they're ranked like 6th in the state right now. So just going versus a team like that and just showing what I'm capable of just means a lot. So
and I saw that play, and that's Ty Miller gets credit for a touchdown throw on that. He's just flipping the ball. You're doing all the work for that guy. So anyway, yeah, Ty Miller is a amazing quarterback. But Coach, I want to ask you. Let's talk about Clovis North a little bit. You play them. You're matched up. The number one team in the Central Section, undefeated. What type of adjustments? What type of game are you going to have to play to beat those guys next week?
We just know we got to go. We got to take it to another level. We thought we played them. We played them pretty well, but not good enough. So this time around, we got to fix some things. And it's just we know what we're going up against. But the good part is, you know, we're playing the house money, and we're the underdogs, and so we like that role, and we're gonna do whatever we can do. And so I'm pretty pumped up. It's awesome. Well, you know, it's semifinals. It's pretty cool to be playing, still playing football. There's not a lot of teams playing still, so excited.
Absolutely. So Tommy, what are you looking forward to most against Clovis North in that rematch game?
Really, you know, just going out there, playing with a chip on our shoulder. You know, nobody expects us to win, so I'm just excited to play him and prove everybody wrong. So I know my guys are too, so. You know, just really excited about that.
Well, the most important part about that is you guys expect to win, and I know you guys are going to play your butts off like you have all year. Coach Nagel, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming in to First String Sports.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, thanks for coming in. Good luck the rest of the way.
Yes, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
You bet. You bet. All right. Great conversation here with these guys. Look forward to that game next week against Clovis North. It's going to be a good one. We're going to take a break. We're going to bring on Gabe Camarillo. Still lots of stuff to talk about. Games that we watched this week. The games that are going to be happening next week on 1430 ESPN. All right, rocking the Def Leppard. That was funny. I was actually thinking about this. Gabe Camarillo producing the show. I'm bringing him on here in just a second. But, yeah, when I first started the show, I had this huge playlist of the songs that I wanted played for intros. And then we had to get away from it. But now we're back. We are back doing Def Leppard. I heard some 21 Pilots, just the way I like it. We just heard from Tommy Nix, and, man, that kid is well put together. Again, Coach Nagel, he said it. He's like, why aren't all these other schools jumping on this kid? Absolutely should. I mean, he could do it all. You could line him up as a receiver. I can see him play D1 as a receiver. I can see him play D1 as a safety, as a corner. Coach Nagel's got it right, man. Why isn't everybody jumping on this kid? Clovis East with that win against Sanger, 17-14. One for the ages. Again, I forgot that was their first playoff win in 15 years. Coach Nagel hinted on it a bit of, the lull that Clovis East football had. Remember, they had that hot start last year and injuries. Harold Duvall went out and didn't play the last five games. And yeah, their season just took a nosedive. But, yeah, this year they're formidable. You mentioned that Clovis North game that they played earlier. That game was tight until the end. A couple interceptions doomed Clovis East. But I don't know. Can anybody beat Clovis North? That's the question. Clovis East can. They got the skill set to do it. Will they do it? It remains to be seen. We'll find out next Friday night. I want to bring on Gabe right now. So, Gabe, it was really fun to talk to Coach Jenkins of Kerman on their game-winning touchdown, Coach Biggs on their game-winning touchdown, and then we had another game-saving tackle by Tommy Nix on fourth down that essentially ended the game as the Timberwolves advanced. But what an incredible week of football. It seems like every time we checked Twitter or got text messages, every game was coming down to it. What a great week of high school football.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a lot to do with the competitive equity in the playoffs. The Cal Preps computers forming the best possible matchups for the quarterfinals. There were so many close games, way more close games than blowouts. Maybe under the old format, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. So 1, 2, 3, 4 advance in D1. 1, 2, 3, 4 advance in D2. In D3, we got 1 versus 5 and 3 versus 7. So pretty darn close. Yeah, the competitive equity on that one hand definitely works. We got some very competitive games, especially this week. There were some blowouts in week one as well. But, yeah, for the most part, it worked. I did mention the Tehachapi, you know, getting hosed and Hanford getting hosed in that playoff game.
Yeah, well, let me put it this way, Paul. If Sanger was in Division II, they'd win every game by 28 points. Because they're in Division I, they play Clovis East very tough. And I think we all saw Sanger belong to Division I this year.
Absolutely. And think about it this way, too. Clovis West is a base D2. Clovis West, that's just a strange thought, isn't it?
Well, that's because they were in Division II in 2021, and that's actually when they faced Clovis East in the first round. And you might remember Clovis West went all the way until they lost to Bullard, who was in Division II that year. So the only reason why I think West and East are base D2 was because of that one season, but I'm hoping next year that changes.
Yeah, Gabe, and you were on the sideline roaming around getting different angles of the Sanger and Clovis East game that Coach Nagel was great to get his perspective and Tommy Nix as well. From your perspective, how do you describe, you know, especially the change in momentum from the first half to the second half and that basically that goal line stand that Clovis East had?
It basically came down to Clovis East stopped the run in the first half and didn't stop the run in the second half. And I really am curious why that was the case. Did Sanger do something different? Did Sanger just come out of halftime with their hair on fire and they played their best half of football of the year? They definitely, by the way, played their best half of football of the entire season in the second half because they almost beat one of the best teams, not just in the Valley, but in the state. I mean, Clovis East is state ranked in the top 30 to 40, according to different publications. And Clovis East almost lost to Sanger, which if that would have happened, that would have been the biggest win in Sanger football history and would have been, I think, one of the bigger upsets. But the reason why it was such a close game in the second half, Paul, you had Sanger held to under 3 yards a carry in the first half. Israel Robles, despite that, still ended up with 157 yards and over 5 yards of carry. So you obviously saw him get those big runs in the second half. And also, several missed catches on the Clovis East side of things. They could have opened the game up. It should not have been 17-14, but it was because of some mistakes, not just dropping the balls, but also overthrowing some passes as well.
Yeah, I started making tally marks on the long passes that did not work. I ended up making 9 tally marks. So there were 0 for 9 on long passes, talking about Clovis East. And those are balls that they hit on throughout the entire season. They had a lot of one-on-one matchups that they thought they could win. It was a combination of the Sanger defensive secondary doing a good job. They didn't have a lot of help.
How did the sophomore cornerbacks, I think, win that battle between two of the best receivers in the Valley? I mean, you got Harold Duvall and Tommy Nix, but besides Nix's 59-yard touchdown catch, there wasn't that much thrown in the air. The touchdowns that they threw were shovel passes and like 2-yard bubble screen passes. They didn't get anything through the big pass play, which they're used to getting. So that's all on the sophomore corners for Sanger. They played their tails off.
Yeah, number 2, Carlos Young, who had that kickoff return that we talked about. It took it all the way down inside the 5-yard line. Yeah, you know, corners, and you've seen it at the college level, Gabe, covering Fresno State and being down on the field for all the Fresno State games. But corners, you got to be a dog. And so those sophomores for Sanger, they did not back down at all. And, you know, there's a fine line between, you know, being cocky and being overconfident. And so, yeah. I was pretty impressed how they didn't back down at all.
No, and Kaden McGrew deserves credit too, the other sophomore who had to step in because Bryson Baker did not play. He was out with a lower leg injury, and we saw him warm up for Sanger. We were wondering, is he going to give it a go? He didn't see a single snap on offense or defense, and so that's a big what if. What if he had Bryson Baker on second and goal from the 5-yard line, and you run one of those sweet plays with Baker that he's really good at getting because he's not only fast, but he's big. He's a 6'1", 6'2", almost like 190-pound dude, a junior. I think if they had Baker in that final drive, and especially in the final 5 yards, maybe they score.
Yeah, we're watching number 8 warm up on the sidelines, and he didn't look right. You know, favoring that leg. I think it was an ankle injury and trying to jump up and down, but he didn't look right. We didn't see him on the field. All right, they're taking on Clovis North, and Coach Nagel's like, well, we're gonna have to play a really darn good football team to beat those Broncos. We know the pedigree. You know, they destroyed Clovis North 34-0, 5 rushing touchdowns. That's been their MO all season. They're not going to deviate from it. You know, let's take the angle from Clovis North. We've talked about Clovis East, what they need to do to beat Clovis North. What does Clovis North need to do to beat Clovis East?
Do what they did last time. Force turnovers, run some more. I think that's basically what they did to win the last game. This isn't about what Clovis North has to do. We all know what they do, and they do it really well. Really, it's can Clovis East play four consistent quarters on defense? Against Sanger, they played two outstanding quarters in the first half. They struggled in the third quarter. They struggled for the first part of the fourth quarter because, remember, Sanger did move the ball all the way down to the 10, and then they fumbled. And you got to give credit also to Bishop. Tyrone Bishop forced the fumble. That's a great defensive play made. But they did allow Sanger to get down to the 10. But then the defense shows up when it matters most, stopping Sanger three times inside the five. So the inconsistency on defense for Clovis East, that can't carry over to this week because I think the coaches agree with me too. They know you have to play a consistent, almost flawless game against Clovis North, an opponent that does not beat themselves.
Only that one turnover. I say that a lot, but that stat just amazes me. Clovis North, one turnover all season. And they work on it. It's not by accident. Those guys are weight room maniacs. They do drills all the time of, not fumbling the football. And they're trying to strip it from them and rip it from them. But no can do with those great running backs. All right, so move to the bottom of the bracket. We're talking with Gabe Camarillo, host of Home Field Advantage, 3 to 5, Monday through Thursday. Liberty and Clovis, going back and looking at that game tracker on Max Preps, Clovis had that lead, and then Liberty, like they do, they marched down the field. Duluth had a rushing touchdown, and then I didn't realize too, it said on Max Preps that there was an interception. So Clovis was driving, but Deegan Rose threw an interception to basically seal the Liberty win. God, what a job that Coach Aaron Wilkins has done in his second season, almost taking down the defending state champions on the road.
Yeah, I think Clovis's future is very bright. Maddox Merrill had an amazing catch and run in that game where he juked out about three Liberty defenders and put Clovis into the red zone after they started at like their own 30. So that was, I mean, Merrill's only a sophomore.
Yeah.
Rose is only a sophomore. I know Luganville graduate, a very, very storied career for Noah Luganville, all-time leading tackler, and was really good for them in the run game. But I believe they also bring back Roman Moreno. So I feel like Clovis next year will be even better, especially with Deegan Rose being a year older. And this is not the last we'll see of Aaron Wilkins deep into the playoffs. I think they will eventually get over that quarterfinals hump, but this is another year now for Clovis High football where they cannot get into the semifinals. I think the last time they did so was 2015.
Central and Frontier, we talked to Coach Kyle Biggs about that. Wild and wacky win, 36-32. Frontier, the two seed, played in D2 last year. Central, they got the pedigree, they got the moxie, they got the attitude. And according to Coach Kyle Biggs, which is great, I should have explored a little bit more, they played against the referees as well. But, Central, their the rematch against Liberty, in your opinion, what does Central have to do to beat the Patriots?
Yeah, speaking of going to the semifinals, Central's done that every single year except one since the year 2016. So they're used to this type of atmosphere. So is Liberty. I found this cool stat online that for 9 straight postseasons now, we're going to see either the Central Grizzlies or Liberty Patriots in the Division I championship game. So that says a lot about what Kyle Biggs and Brian Nixon are doing. This is the third time they meet in the playoffs. It's going to come down when you have two well-coached teams, they're not going to make mistakes. I mean, I think a big part of Central winning on Friday was them not making too many mistakes, their offense firing on all cylinders, and their confidence when they fell behind with a minute and 14 seconds to go that they were going to score and win that game. And they did with 11 seconds. So I feel the confidence is there for Central. I think it's going to really help against Liberty. Like, most teams would go into a Liberty game and say, oh, it's Liberty. The Patriots are two-time defending section champions, defending state champions, and we lost to them 35-14 a couple months ago. This Central team's not going to have that thought cross their mind because they're playing, they believe, and I believe, their best football right now of the season, exactly when you want to. David Marquez, I keep betting against this Grizzlies team, but I don't realize that we've never seen something like David Marquez, who in his fifth career start leads a game-winning drive in the final, minute 14, throws five touchdowns over 330 yards. This is a story that needs to be written by somebody. The story of David Marquez, who was a backup the first 3 years, even was passed over, didn't win the quarterback competition in August, but he comes in, and most kids, the backup quarterbacks, they may not want to be the starter if they were looked over the first time. They may transfer out. They may say, oh, you know what? You didn't want me back then. Why do you want me now? Not this guy. He's unselfish. He knew what his team needed. They needed a spark against Clovis, and ever since then, the trajectory for the Grizzlies has been way different.
Yeah, and Riley, the kid that started the season, he was a junior, so they went with the junior over the senior, and the senior, and like Coach Big said, he's a quiet guy. He just lets his play talk, and, man, again, he did make a perfect throw on that play. That's a play that's gonna go around for a long time in the minds of a lot of people. That was a great win for Center. All right, Gabe, so – You want to do some predictions? You want to predict who you think is going to win between North and East and Central and Liberty?
And I want to add this about East. I want to make it clear. Their defense played great against Sanger, but it had to be perfect against Sanger because the offense could not get the big play. So I'm going to say this. I'm not going to make an exact prediction, but I'll say Clovis East has to keep playing the defense they played this past game against Sanger. But you got to hit on those big plays. That's how you beat Clovis North. You hit them over the top. That's how they made it a game against Clovis North. Back in September with the big pass plays to Harold Duvall, Tommy Nix had a long touchdown run in the very early part of that game. You got to get the big plays going, and it has to be through the air. You can't rely too much on the bubble screens and the shovel passes because Clovis North does not miss their tackles. Their defense just shut out Clovis West, for crying out loud. How do you shut out Clovis West? No one's been able to do that except now Clovis North. So that's kind of, you know, that worries you a little bit if you're Clovis East. This Broncos defense is playing really well. I can see why Tommy Nix Jr. is saying that nobody believes in Clovis East, because North's just been playing the best football that I've seen, honestly, in this area since the Central Grizzlies of 2019. I mean, the Grizzlies were so dominant. They were also undefeated that year, and so are the Broncos now, 11-0, and looking just as dominant as those Grizzlies teams from about 4 years ago.
Yeah, I got mad love for Clovis East, but I think I just feel like Clovis North's the team of destiny this season. And Liberty and Central, I've predicted from the beginning that I think Central gets to that championship game, so I'm picking Central over Liberty. I am. I'm doing it. I'm thinking they're doing it. They got the moxie. Liberty's not as strong as the last couple years. We can only base them on this season going into Liberty. Coaching certainly matters, and two of the great ones in the section are going against each other. But I don't know. I think Central's got them this year.
Well, they'll be playing two teams again. I mean, I'm sure the referees are going to try their best to be impartial, but it is kind of funny how it always ends up being bad refereeing against Fresno teams in Bakersfield.
Yeah,
I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but how come it's always the same story? I love to hear a Bakersfield team get hosed by a call in Bakersfield against a Fresno school.
That's a true story. All right, let's move to Division II. I was able to watch Central Valley Christian, and my gosh, Gabe, they're going to get a good one. Bryson Donaldson, he's got that next level speed. He's well put together. He's kind of low to the ground. I tried to think of a comparison. It's almost Robbie Rouse-like and a little Brandon Ramirez-like. If you could kind of combine those, thinking about Brandon Ramirez playing
Bryson,
for San Joaquin Memorial.
Isn't Bryson 6 feet tall? So he's too tall to be Robbie Rouse.
Yeah, 6 feet? I think it might be fudged a little bit. I would say maybe 5'10 and a half. We're about at eye level, so we're going to say about 5'10 and a half. Okay, we'll go 6 feet.
Well, I mean, he's going to be maybe like a Robbie Rouse when it's all said and done if he keeps playing this way. And I can already hear the naysayers say, oh, it was Tehachapi. Tehachapi kept one of the better running backs in the Valley in Bryson Abbott of Bakersfield to, like, I think 70-something yards on a lot of carries. And they went from facing that Bryson to a totally different Bryson, a beast Bryson, who – what was his final numbers, Paul?
390 yards, six touchdowns.
Oh, my gosh. See – and I want to cause controversy. So on Twitter, and I want to get your opinion because you've seen both these games, who had the better playoff running back performance? Brandon Ramirez last year with his 336 and 3 against Central, or the 391 and 6 that Bryson had against Tehachapi? Which one was more impressive?
I saw both firsthand. Well, the thing about Brandon Ramirez is that his number was called like 90% of the play. So they only threw one pass that entire game. I liked Brandon, to be honest. I liked Brandon Ramirez's game. That was just, that's
it was
something
Division
that
I've never seen.
That was a Division I. But, I mean, Bryson put on a show last night, talked to Coach Mason Hughes after the game. And, you know, the Tehachapi coaching staff was like, man, you got a darn good player. And Mason Hughes is like, oh, heck yeah, I do. I'm going to ride that guy. So
that's not taken away from Bryson's game, by the way. It's just a fun debate. And the fact that we're even having that debate, because Brandon had a historic game that I thought would never be touched. Like, no one would ever have a game comparable to it. Bryson just did it the next year after that. I mean,
and they were handing the ball. I mean, in the tight situations, third and eight, they were just handing him the ball and let him do his work. And he was picking up first down after first down.
Man, and you know what, Bryce? He's going to single-handedly win that Division II title for CVC. I don't see Tulare Union stopping him. I mean, Tulare Union gave up 42 to Kingsburg. And, you know, that'll be probably a high-scoring game between CVC and Tulare Union. I could see that game also being in the 40s. But can Tulare stop Bryson? If they can't, then they're not going to win.
Just my initial thoughts on that is Central Valley Christian, they didn't throw the ball a lot. When they did, they were fairly effective against Tehachapi. I think they're going to be a more balanced offense against Tulare Union. I don't think it's going to be the Bryson show. I think Brent Cruz is going to throw the ball a little bit more in that one. You know, that weird turf, or what do you want to call it, at Bob Mathias Stadium, you know, Kingsburg hates that thing. And you know, they lost there earlier in the season, and they lost there last night. That's not an easy turf to play on. It's hard to tackle. You're landing hard. I was down on the field against CVC in the CVC game, and that turf / grass is in really, really good shape. It's going to be super cold. Yeah, I don't think Tulare Union is going to put up 49, that's for sure.
And what do you think about the other side of the bracket?
Yeah, so we got Centennial and Lemoore. Lemoore had a kickoff return for a touchdown against Sunnyside and a pick six in that one. Mm. The defending champs, man, those guys are tough. But Centennial is playing really good football. We talk about how Central is playing their best football of the year. Centennial had that rough stretch where they were missing some guys, some star players, but they are fully healthy. I think that game is going to be pretty darn close. I still see Lemoore winning by a touchdown in that one.
Lemoore has five different running backs that they use, which is crazy. We talk about the three running backs that Clovis North has. Lemoore has five dudes that they feel confident in running the ball. So it basically comes down to Centennial's run defense. We saw in the playoffs last year struggle against Clovis North. This will probably be the best rushing attack they have faced since league play. I mean, Madera, I think we said going into the playoffs that Madera being in D2 wasn't going to stop them, and obviously it didn't from beating Bakersfield Christian. But we thought, okay, eventually when they play one of those top echelon teams like a Centennial or a CBC or a Lemoore, then it's going to catch up to them. But good season for Madera. A great win at Bakersfield Christian. Centennial's a different beast. This is kind of weird. I feel like it's a Division I team versus a D2 team, but I could see the D2 team winning, and I actually think Lemoore is going to be the favorite here.
And Centennial all year, Gabe, has been on that D2, D1 bubble. Yeah. Scored 42 points in their round one, 42 points in round two. It's going to be a battle. And remember, Centennial gave Frontier, a really good game as
exactly.
Well. All right, let's jump to Division III a little bit. Oh, man, Coach Damon Jenkins, I'd run through a wall for that guy and that crazy ending. I still can't believe it. I can't believe that Kennedy gave up a 75-yard touchdown run on the last play of the game. But anyway, playing Mission Prep. We don't know a whole lot about Mission Prep, just what we've seen online a bit. They seem like a defensive-minded team. They're going to try to control the clock in that one. Kerman, I mean, they beat Kennedy. They beat the 4 seed on the road. And then how about those Washington Union Panthers? I don't get those guys, man. They beat Templeton. They had a home game in round one, 25-7. And they're like, hey, let's go take on an undefeated Atascadero, defending state champs as well. We'll beat them 41-13. What's going on here, Gabe? Explain to me.
It's been tough for the Coast, man. I feel bad for the Coast. Let me look through all the brackets, but I'm pretty sure Mission Prep is the only Coast team remaining. They are. Uh-huh. Oh, Morro Bay, too. Morro Bay in Division 5. But
Okay,
so Morro Bay and Mission Prep, representing how many Coast schools that made the playoffs? Man, that's tough. And that's not good for the reputation of the Coast to have a 10-0 Atascadero team lose to a 3-7 Washington Union team, 41-13. Like, oh, my goodness. That set the Coast football scene back about 5 years. Having said that, Washington Union, what a great story they are. 3-7, they don't care. They played actually a really tough schedule in the non-league. Played Torres, a physical D4 team. They played through the Tri-County Kings Canyon, so that means you play Kingsburg, and they played them tough, and you play Central Valley Christian. So I think Washington Union was definitely more battle-tested than Atascadero, and they're going to go on the road again to Visalia, or actually to Larry on next Friday to take on Mission Oak, who, You always talk about rematches. Does the team that wins the first game win the second game? Mission Oak won the second game by even more points than they did the first game. So it's going to be pretty fun. We're either going to see Mission Oak and their high-flying offense in the championship game in D3 or Washington Union and their physical defense in the championship game.
All right, D4. D4 has been an exciting bracket since the first game. Shafter undefeated, taking on Torres and Exeter and Dos Palos. That's a 3-2. Do you think the winner of Exeter maybe I shouldn't do this.
No, but, say it.
Well, I was just going to say, just assuming Shafter is going to make it to the championship game, do you think either an Exeter or Dos Palos can beat the Generals?
Let me just put it this way, and I love Joe Marquez. I'm actually probably going to have him on the show here in the next upcoming week, but Torres struggled against Sunnyside's deep passing attack, and if there's something that Shafter does really well, it's throwing the ball deep and connecting deep. Ezekiel Osborne, he's already won a Valley Championship as a freshman. Now he's a sophomore, and he's still putting up these crazy numbers. He had a decent game by his standards, 189 yards and a touchdown throw, but Shafter ran the ball. And you know what? I got to say I was wrong. I thought Shafter would try and air it out and go all spread because of Golden Valley size, but Shafter ran the ball 29 times for almost 250 yards. So when you got Ezekiel Osborne throwing the ball, and then you got running the ball like that with the offensive line that Shafter has, that's why we say Shafter is such a heavy favorite. Does Dos Palos or Exeter have a chance against those guys? I think Exeter's playing their dream season right now. They beat Roosevelt. They edged out Highland. They finished the year, 9-1, right?
They lost to Reedley in the last game of the season.
Just shy of a perfect season. So Exeter, don't tell them what Shafter can do, because I think they can totally play up to their level and maybe give Shafter a scare, or Dos Palos as well. So to answer your question, do they have a chance? Yeah, sure, everyone has a chance. But I think it's obvious that the Generals are the heavy favorite there.
Yeah, absolutely. And their offensive line is really big. A lot of people have said, we haven't been able to see them live, but a lot of people have told us that, you know, they look like a Division III, maybe even a Division II type team. All right, in Division V, we got Morro Bay and Bishop and Wasco and Liberty and Madera. Hey, is it true Wasco got they beat Reedley on a scoop and score late in that game?
Yeah, Reedley was trying to run the clock out, and Wasco ended up recovering a fumble. Actually, I don't know if they're trying to run the clock out because it was tied at 21.
Yeah.
But Reedley did fumble, and it was a scoop and score with very little time remaining for Wasco.
All right. So, and then Division VI, we got Mendota and Fowler and Strathmore at Arvin. I want to mention, too, I think I have in the past, but Arvin and Division VI, they almost have 3,000 kids in their school. That's just so strange to me, and my mind can't wrap itself around all that stuff. But, hey, I picked Fowler from the beginning as a 7th seed. They're going to have a tough game against Mendota, but when you got a good quarterback, you're going to be able to win a lot of football games.
That's for sure. Man, this is so fun. There's so many great semifinal matchups for next Friday. I have no idea where we're going, but whichever one we pick, I think for sure is going to be a close one.
All right. Good job by you, Gabe. Appreciate you as always. Was it true that your time frame was thrown off? I know you called a Mountain West basketball game last night, Fresno State and girls, women's team. But are you thrown off a little bit about this weekend?
A little bit because, the games were on Thursday night. But the way I saw it, it's a three-day weekend. So, and actually, to be honest, all my weekends are three-day weekends. I don't have a show on Friday. So it kind of felt like normal for me.
Awesome. Okay, really quick, Fresno State, what are the keys to the Bulldogs beating the San Jose Spartans?
I think it's all about the defense for Fresno State. Can they make their tackles and avoid giving up the big play?
All right, can't wait. 7:30 kickoff. San Jose beat them Spartans. That's my dad's alma mater, but heck no, I'm not rooting for the Spartans at all. Go Bulldogs tonight. Thank you, Gabe. As always, appreciate you.
Sure thing, Paul.
All right, thank you to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Jorge Rodriguez, of course, Gabe Camarillo, Damon Jenkins of Kerman, Kyle Big Central, Brandon Nagel, Tommy Nix of Clovis East. Always fun to talk about high school football, high school sports in general. You guys have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.